And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, this is Sherry Patterson with the Black Awareness Association. And we're here with Kay Smith, who is navigating a conversation with attorney Lori Colbert from Colbert Family Law, LLC in Anchorage, Alaska, who is our guest. And I'm just going to let them go at it again. Ladies?
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sherry. Lori, would you kind of go into a little more detail on the Brown versus Board of Education for our listeners who may not be familiar with that case, that landmark case?
Sure. I'll go with what I remember and know. Brown represented Linda Brown, and she was a third grader at the time in Topeka, Kansas, and she wanted to enroll in summer school, and she was not able to because she was Black. And so her parents took it up with the Board of Education, and the case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it changed, what it did is it changed our previous case that was from the 1800s. I want to say it was like 1896. And the case was Plessy v. Ferguson. And in Plessy v. Ferguson, they ruled that separate and could be equal. And it was a fight against people riding on the railroad. But that case had stood all the way from 1954 till the Supreme Court did Brown versus Board of Education.
Wonderful, wonderful, because we have some young listeners and who may not be familiar with that case. Thank you for sharing. The other person that I'd like to have you share some perspectives on is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, also called RBG, or recently I've heard the notorious RBG, and rightfully so, she's being remembered. She was a civil rights icon, an American jurist. For women who have their own credit card now and have been able to purchase a home on their own, who have voting rights, who has someone on their side concerning gender-based discrimination, Equal Rights Amendment, we thank the great RBG. She is the second woman to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. She served from 1993 until her death recently this month. Would you share some perspectives on the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
She, too, is an inspiration. She used her voice and her ability as a lawyer and as a judge and a justice to see that women obtained some equal rights that we did not have before. She was so smart. I mean, her intelligence level was just amazing. And she was able to voice things in a way to make it plainly understood where she was coming from. And she did that out of, again, her own circumstances where she had been turned away from places and not being able to get into places, even though she had the education and the credentials that she was able to do, much like her predecessor on the bench, on the court, Sandra Day O'Connor. I think Sandra Day O'Connor also had her first job, I think, was as a legal secretary, even though she had a law degree. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that that's what happened with Sandra Day O'Connor. And with Justice Ginsburg, she started teaching because she couldn't get the jobs that she wanted because she was a woman. And so I think that, you know, that we all women have something to thank her for. And, you know, when you think about her mind and the fact that she worked as hard as she did, being as sick as she was, and up in her years still, she was able to do all of those brilliant things. I think it's just amazing. And I think we all have to take a hat off to her and just thank her for her service.
Yes, yes. Another amazing greatest of all times, a GOAT.
Yes.
Awesome, yes. So on our next question, what are some of your strategies for living and or dealing with the current racial climate that we're now faced with in our country? For, you know, what we're hearing mostly is becoming more familiar with the fact that the Black family has to actually prepare young children, their children, to interact and to integrate in the public, especially, you know, with law enforcement or people in power positions. And so boys in particular, might I add. So, would you share some of your strategies for living and or dealing with the current racial climate in our country?
It's hard. It's really, really hard. I have two young grandsons, and they are 6 and 7. The oldest one is on the autism spectrum, and he's really high functioning, but I especially worry about him. You shouldn't have to prepare your children for their encounter with the police. I think one of the hardest things is that other people, non-Black people, don't understand that even though it's not affecting us personally, it's affecting us. And I think that's probably the hardest thing, that, you know, when you see George Floyd on the ground, that's affecting, that affects me just like it was my son or my brother or my father or whatever. And I don't think the other cultures around us recognize that. And so when you think about where we're at, you know, today in this country, you know, right now Kentucky is on high alert as they prepare to give the grand jury findings from Breonna Taylor. Now, why they need a grand jury finding, that's neither here nor there. I don't do criminal law, but somebody needs to be in jail, is what I say. I think that we have to check on each other to make sure that we are doing okay. Because I think mentally and emotionally, it's very draining what we're seeing every day. And so I think that we have to support each other. We have to talk about it. We have to talk it out. And we have to get comfortable having uncomfortable conversations with other people about this.
Yes.
Because we've, for 400 years, we've allowed people to be comfortable. We take on the load. And so now it's time to have those uncomfortable conversations. And it's hard for us to have those. It's really uncomfortable for them, but it's hard. It's just as hard for us to have those conversations about what we've experienced and how George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Aubrey Ahmaud, how that has affected us. And I worry about my little boys. I worry about, you know, they speak their mind, and, you know, I don't want them speaking their mind, getting them in trouble. But, you know, at the same time, I want them educated. I want them to know what their rights are. I want them to speak up for themselves, but I don't want them in doing that to get themselves killed because they do that.
Right, right.
And it's sad that we have to worry about that.
Right. Ladies, can I jump in here? I recently spoke at a local meeting, and I was asked to several months ago, but I was in no emotional condition to do so. And so I needed till September to be on the path to healing so that I could. And I'm glad that I did. As a response, I had an email waiting for me the next morning from someone that was in the meeting. And she said, "Sherry, I had no idea." She said, "I don't know where I've been, but I had no idea that your people have lived and have been treated as this for so many years." And she said some other things. And so I'm finding in this climate or this process that we're in, yes, it's very emotional, it's very draining. And this one hit us like a ton of bricks. As I described it, is as if the pot has been boiling for 400 years and it just overflowed this time. And we're just like, oh no, this can't continue. Nope, this is 2020. This can't be happening again. And the fact is, it is. And so I'm with you. I hear exactly what you say. I have grandbabies also. I have an adult male. As a son, I have brothers. I have friends who, you know, we worry about. And it's a very, very trying time for us. And I even said in that meeting for one of the things, you know, many have asked, what can they do in this process? And one of the things I pointed out was, check on your Black friends. check on your Black friends. We are hurting right now. We're grieving right now. We need you to reach out to us. Don't be afraid to reach out to us. And no, you may not know what to say, but just you reaching out and saying, I'm here, I don't know what to say, does us a world of good. Yeah. So I hear you. I absolutely hear you. On that note, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.